Jerome Corsi with us. We're talking about his work, Hunting Hitler. We're going to get right into it. He's reading the book, by the way. Absolutely riveting. Back in a moment with Jerry on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Jerome Corsi with us. Jerry, so let's get back to Stalin for a second, and then we'll move ahead in this truly remarkable story. So Stalin didn't believe that Hitler was dead. Was he able to convince Truman, hey, he's still alive somewhere?
Well, Stalin did not believe his scientists, didn't believe the autopsy. Stalin was saying there's no convincing proof that that Hitler was killed. He tried to explain this to Truman's aides, I believe the Potsdam Conference, and Truman basically didn't care. To Truman, this was a detail. Truman was more interested about moving ahead and winning the war with Japan. He was more of a practical guy. I mean, this was history already to Truman. It was shocking to Jimmy Burns, you know, the Secretary of State for, and also some of the FDR aides that Stalin told. Stalin was really trying to say to the president's aides, Truman's aides, that Stalin got away and you guys, you American intelligence, allowed it to happen. And you're taking Nazi scientists, you're taking Nazi Gestapo, and you're making them part of your CIA you're going to form. And Truman knew it was true. Alan Dulles was doing this in Bern, Switzerland. And Stalin knew that Alan Dulles had been working with Martin Bormann, who was Hitler's general secretary, number two to Hitler, really. And they'd been moving, Bormann and Alan Dulles had been moving Nazi money out of Germany through Swiss bank authorities and aides since 1943.
And lots of it.
Lots of today's dollars, probably trillions of dollars. I mean, Nazis had all kinds of loot. They had gold, a bullion from countries they'd plundered, the gold from the Jews' teeth in the concentration camp, endless money. I mean, they had all this loot, treasures, art treasures. And Bormann, by 1943, and Himmler realized that the Nazis were probably going to lose. So they get in touch with Alan Dulles in Bern, Switzerland. Alan Dulles is working for OSS, the predecessor to the CIA, in Bern, Switzerland throughout World War II. And Alan Dulles, who was the banker, essentially, from Wall Street, lawyer, banker.
He's the guy that Kennedy ended up kicking out of the CIA.
Yes. And in fact, in my book on, you know, who really killed JFK, I again tell this story and say that Alan Dulles killed Jack Kennedy because he would not fight Kennedy's lying wars. And Kennedy fired Alan Dulles at the end of the Bay of Pigs for lying to him with the CIA. Kennedy came to see Alan Dulles as a New World Order guy, and he understood the ties to Nazi Germany, and Kennedy was not going to be lied to by this guy. Alan Dulles was lying to everybody, and Alan Dulles was working with the Nazis at the end of World War II.
Did he know Hitler directly, do you know?
I don't believe there's a possibility that Alan or John Foster Dulles may have met Hitler. There's also stories that even John Foster Dulles was signing letters, Heil Hitler, when they were working together with Hitler. I've never seen one of those letters, but there's a lot of reports about them. At any rate, the Dulles brothers were more than hip deep in working with Nazi Germany. And when Bormann wanted to move Nazi money around the world, where Alan Dulles put it was into the U.S. stock market and into Argentina largely, although they probably invested in a dozen different countries. And Bormann ended up at the end of World War II owning major shares of maybe 500 to 700 U.S. companies through the stock market and companies in Argentina. They were all preparing for their escape. And one of the conditions was that Alan Dulles would take this money and help the Nazis place it outside Germany so that when they lost World War II, the Nazis had loot to go to. And part of the deal was that Alan Dulles would help Nazis escape. I think Stalin knew this, and Stalin was saying Hitler got away because you guys let him get away. And that was a message that Harry Truman did not want heard. And when Eisenhower came out and told Stars and Stripes, and by the way, I publish a lot of this. You can see the Stars and Stripes in my book because I actually show you the little clipping where Eisenhower says there is reason to believe that Hitler is still alive. He's saying this in October 45. Hitler was supposed to have killed himself on April 30th, 45. Eisenhower doesn't say something like that unless he's got reason to say it.
So, Jerry, the bodies that were ultimately discovered,
yes,
wherever they were they,
yes,
doubles? I mean, did they actually kill a guy and a woman?
No, they just took pieces of bodies and said, this is Hitler and this is Eva Braun. It was before DNA testing. These bodies were so badly charred and blown to bits. I mean,
who would know?
Who in the woman's body had shown shrapnel wounds in her chest, and she had some hematoma, she had bleeding. Well, if this was Eva Braun and she died of cyanide and her body was dumped outside the bunker and it got hit with shrapnel, she wouldn't have been bleeding. You have to be alive to be bleeding. I mean, there were so many defaults with these bodies. Once by about the 60s and then through the 90s, when the Russians were letting the world see their archives materials, including the autopsy reports, these autopsies have enough internal evidence in them that you can know these are not Hitler's and Eva Braun's bodies. Even the dental records, the Russians captured the dentists and the dental technicians for Hitler and Eva Braun. And they, before they did the autopsy, they had the dentists draw all the, dental work for, mm-hmm, Hitler and Eva Braun. They found some, Eva Braun had, another set of dental work done. Well, the Russians created the dental work that they shoved into the models of these corpses and said, oh, look, the dental work proves that this is Hitler and Eva Braun. It was a complete fraud from the very beginning. And the Russian evidence that we now have makes it clear that that's the case.
So if they survived, Jerry,
right,
how did they get out of the country? Who helped them? We'll get into where they may have gone in a second. But how did,
right,
they get out?
Well, they had excellent, first of all, this is complete chaos. And there was a story that this aviatrix, Hannah Reitsch, R-E-I-T-S-C-H, and she flew into Berlin on the very last days with General Robert Reiter von Greim. He was her lover. She went and visited Hitler. She was a very famous aviatrix. She was awarded the Iron Cross for heroism flying in World War II. She was brave. She landed in the middle of all this shelling. They go and visit Hitler in the Führer bunker, and she takes off from the Tiergarten, outside, right in central Berlin, in a small plane. The Russians try to shoot the plane down. They think that this is Hitler escaping. I don't think she brought Hitler out. The evidence is very good that she did not. It looks like Hitler was brought out by an advanced helicopter that the Germans had. They lifted him out of the Führer bunker area.
War's not over yet, though. It's close, but it wasn't over, right?
In fact, there's shelling going on. The Russian army is right on the outskirts here of Berlin. Well, they're in Berlin. They're actually just moving in towards
the Chancellery.
Yeah,
it's the Battle of Berlin.
Street-by-street fighting. I mean, this is, hand-to-hand, street-by-street, and the Russians are doing everything they can to get to the Führer bunker because they want to be the first to capture Hitler. They want to have the trophy and the prize. So, Hitler's getting out has got to happen in a very quick fashion. And they basically fly Hitler to a German city where they have an airplane. In fact, in the archives and various of the historians in Argentina that I've worked with claim to have a manifest from the airplane that brought Hitler into Spain where he was to link up with a submarine. And Hitler and Eva Braun were flown out of Germany, and one of the very, very famous pilots in Germany during World War II was supposedly witness to this and may have been the pilot flying them out. And there's pretty good documentary evidence of that this flight did take Hitler and several other top Nazis, possibly including Mueller, who was the head of the intelligence agency, the Gestapo, out of Berlin. Helicopter liftoff and then airplane flight into Spain to hook them up with a German U-boat to get them out of Europe. As that all happened, it was happening with the, again, a wink-wink acknowledgement of U.S. intelligence allowed it to happen.
Somebody allowed it to happen. Somebody must have known something, and they may have even helped.
Well, certainly they did the wink-wink. They said, you know, let them get away. Because remember, moving all these, this huge amount of loot, but Dulles had moved into U.S. stock market in Argentina. Well, Bormann and the top Germans expected a return for that. And part of the return was, you get us out of here so we can enjoy that loot later.
Absolutely. So lots of money involved. They get to Spain. Then what?
Spain, they get picked up by a U-boat. And the U-boat is this U-530, a U-boat. And the U-boat takes Hitler and Eva Braun and ends up surfacing in Mar del Plata, Argentina. And in fact, I've got even pictures in the book of the newspaper from Argentina when the submarine got there. Submarine just surfaces in Mar del Plata in July 10th, 1945. Here's a Nazi submarine in the middle of the harbor. This Nazi submarine looks like it's...
And the war's over now.
The war's over. Yeah, the war in Europe is over in May 45. This is July 45. German U-boat surfaces. And immediately the crew is taken into custody by the Argentinian authorities. And the U.S. Naval Intelligence gets immediately involved. And it turns out this is a small crew. It's not the full complement of sailors.
Right. It's a hand-picked crew, just enough to run that submarine.
And surprisingly, there's no maps, there's no diary, there's no logbook, there's no indication of where the sub has been. And the captain is a guy named Carl Felix Schuller, who is, he's the executive officer. He was 21 years old. And the captain, the commanding officer, was a guy named Otto Vermuth. He was 25 years old. Well, U.S. Naval Intelligence says to begin with, it says, these guys aren't the captain and executive officer. They start examining the submarine, and they find that the submarine main raft, there's a raft to go on shore. The raft is missing, and there is seawater in the compartment. And they're getting reports that the submarine had spent time on the shore of Argentina offloading for about a week. Passengers onto the shore through this raft. And George, it's remarkable. In the archives in Washington, and again, you can see it in the book, they had a manifest of each one of these German sailors on the U-boat, what they had in their possession. So here's Vermuth, the commander. He's got a German-Spanish dictionary in his possession when he's captured coming off the submarine. Well, of course, all German U-boats throughout the war made sure all the officers had German Spanish dictionaries. What's he doing with a Spanish dictionary? They have Argentinian cigarettes and Argentinian pesos when they're apprehended. So clearly they had stopped along the shore. And then George, I remarkably got a U.S. Naval Intelligence attache report, July 18, 1945. And I show it to you in the book so you can see it. This Naval Intelligence in Buenos Aires is reporting back to Naval Intelligence in Washington, and they're saying, we're getting news reports here. The submarine was sighted, all across the shore here, offloading, and in fact, we're being told, U.S. Naval Intelligence is saying that Eva Braun and Adolf Hitler were landed by this submarine in the south of Argentina.
Now, what happened to the sub after all this?
Well, the sub was taken into custody. I think eventually it was brought back to the United States and destroyed.
They sank it or something.
They sank it. Yeah, the submarine was sunk. It was just completely, when they surfaced, the barnacles, all this whole hull of this ship looked like it had been at sea for 10 years. I mean, it was in terrible condition. How they crossed the Atlantic, nobody knows. The crew all gives the same kind of story, almost in the same words when they're interrogated. And interrogation records are in the archives in Washington. One story after another reads like they rehearsed it. And finally, the Naval Intelligence is saying, when we ask them detailed questions, they get irritated and won't answer. So Naval Intelligence thinks these guys, the Nazi crew, is lying to Naval Intelligence. They bring the entire Nazi crew back to Washington and interrogate them some more. Now, this Nazi crew eventually is released. Many of them become either Argentinian citizens or U.S. citizens, and they never break their cover story. But the press, there's actually even one reporter in Chicago that filed one day a report saying Hitler got to Argentina. And immediately after that report was published, and again, I reported in the book, I show you where it was published, to show you the article, then what happened is the newspapers were clamped down. And from then on, no newspapers were allowed to print anything.
Oh, really? So they had a little control of the media then, huh?
No, this is the whole point. The whole point of this is we've got here a disinformation story in the building, starting with Trevor Roper, this young British historian who U.S. intelligence officers in Germany hand the conclusions to his book before he's even had a chance to interview anyone from the Führer bunker. And the conclusions in this in the military intelligence report that were handed to Trevor Roper were written by a guy named Saxe, S-A-X-E, and it's in the archives, and I show you it in the book, again, because point by point, what U.S. military intelligence told Trevor Roper to write about the cover story of how Hitler and Eva Braun committed suicide was exactly what he wrote. He wrote it very fast, and then that story became the official story, so that anybody who disagreed with that story, you know, was tinfoil hat and a nutcase and would be ridiculed. But the documents, naval intelligence documents behind the scenes never seen, which I found, by the way, they were misfiled in the archives. It took me almost 2 years to find these documents.
These pictures you have of the Hitler double, it really doesn't look like Hitler, does it?
It doesn't. No, it doesn't. But, you know, George, this is a Hitler double who's photographed by the Russian military in the garden outside the Führer bunker. He's lying there dead. He's got a bullet hole in the center of his head. Now, why would the Nazis go to the trouble of producing a Hitler double if it wasn't to cover Hitler escaping?
Exactly. Exactly. I assume when he got off that U-boat, he had his mustache shaved off.
I think they may have even, you know, there are reports that they put a plastic surgeon on the boat and made sure he looked different when he got off. But again, when Hitler escaped Argentina, this had been carefully planned. There was a family, the Eichhorns, who were very, very close to Hitler. The Eichhorn family had been in Germany. Yeah, they were industrialists.
Wealthy. Very wealthy, right?
Very, very wealthy. At the time of the putsch, they were very, very wealthy. And they started writing checks out of their checkbook to this Hitler and this Nazi party when it was nothing. And then as the 30s progress, the Eichhorns relocate in Argentina, of all places. And they begin in La Falda, which is a town outside north of Buenos Aires. They begin with a hotel, La Falda. They have a hotel that they are using to be kind of like a Nazi center. All the Germans at the time in Argentina had parties. It was a resort. It was a Nazi resort in Argentina. And the Eichhorns every year, every couple of years, go back to Berlin and have private lunches with the Führer, have, intimate discussions with Hitler. They're filmed having discussions with Hitler. The first Mercedes-Benz in South America, Hitler has personally shipped to the Eichhorns. And I found a memo in the file where J. Edgar Hoover, very quickly after, we're looking for Hitler. At the same time we're doing this cover story, we're looking for Hitler. And J. Edgar Hoover writes a memo as head of director of the FBI, dated November 13th, 1945, in which he says that the Eichhorns, one Mrs. Eichhorn, a member of the Argentinian Society and a proprietor of the largest spa hotel in La Falda, Argentina, said that before the Nazi Party was founded, she made her bank account available to Goebbels.
Hold on for a second, Jerry. We'll come back with more Fast Night right here on Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, we will flip the switch and take your phone calls with Jerry Corsi. as we talk about hunting Hitler. And welcome back, Jerry Corsi, with us. Jerry, let's get back into this family, the Eichhorns up there in Argentina. So obviously, even before Hitler escapes Germany, they're told about this somehow, aren't they?
Yes, the Eichhorns are preparing for Hitler to escape Germany. Again, this is a family that goes back to the early period of the Nazi rise, the 1920s. The Eichhorns were industrialists in Germany who funded the rise of the Nazi Party with their checkbook, personal checkbook, and eventually went to Argentina, where they settled in La Falda, which is this remote village. It's up north, northwest of Buenos Aires, and they created this hotel. The hotel was the in La Falda. La Falda was the town they were settled in. This hotel, by the way, is still standing, and it became a great resort for the Nazis in Argentina during the war. And J. Edgar Hoover, as I say, wrote this memo in November 45 saying that he has reason to believe, J. Edgar Hoover is telling the FBI agents in South America that the FBI has reason to believe the Eichhorns helped Hitler escape, and that Hitler's hiding out with their assistance in Argentina.
Wow.
And there's an FBI memo. I've got it in the book. You can actually read the FBI memo. This is the same time when the U.S. intelligence in Germany is working with the British historian Trevor Roper to write this cover story that Hitler died. In the meantime, Eisenhower is telling Stars and Stripes that Hitler did not die. J. Edgar Hoover is writing memos to the FBI saying, we think Hitler's in Argentina. And you've got U.S. naval intelligence in Buenos Aires saying this submarine, this U-boat, this German U-boat, U-530, that surfaced, we think brought Hitler and Eva Braun to Argentina. And all this information is suppressed from the American people. It's buried in the archives for 50 years. And, you know, the American people are told Trevor Roper's lying story when he never even interviewed anybody. Only 10 pages in the whole book about Hitler killing himself in Trevor Roper's, you know, final days book about Hitler. That lie, that cover story, that fantasy, you know, is the official story. We're all supposed to believe that Hitler, who, you know, was responsible for killing, let's say, 60 million people, last days of his life says, oh, I think I better, you know, better have a will, and I better marry my mistress. What does he care about marrying this woman?
He doesn't. I mean, he just wants to have a little escape.
He doesn't want to be, captured and put on display by the Russians, you know, like Caesar did with one of the Gauls that he captured, brought him back to Rome and ridiculing him in a cage.
Now, Jerry, Eichmann was discovered. He went to Buenos Aires. He was captured in 1960 by Simon Wiesenthal and several others. Why couldn't they find Hitler if he was in Argentina?
I think, first of all, Eichmann was found by a very dedicated group of hunters who, you know, tracked him down and just about had to beg the Israeli government to take him back. I mean, it's another part of the whole story is that after World War II, there was an increasing reluctance to really find these Nazis and bring them to justice and to dig up all this old history. And Hitler, of course, had with Bormann's billions brought out of Argentina with the help of Alan Dulles, you know, the U.S. OSS in Bern, Switzerland. There's lots and lots of money in Perón's Argentina that could hide a person away for as long as they wanted to be hid away. And as long as, you know, Eichmann was living a life, he was working, he was out in public. If you did what Hitler, you know, I even show this resort that they created for Hitler ultimately down in Bariloche in Argentina, which is in Patagonia, you know, right in the south of Argentina, this resort that looks like Berchtesgaden, built for Hitler to escape to, started years before Hitler left Germany. It's on a lake. You could only get to this place by sea boat, you know, airplane flying in there that lands on this lake in front of this resort. Hitler was absconded and kept away. But yet, in the research I did, within the Argentinian sources, there's now two or three very, very good books in Argentina telling the story as well. My wife is from Argentina. Her father, whom I knew quite well before he passed away, used to take him to Italy. He was a very, adventurous man. He'd fought for the Italian army, and then when the Italian army fell apart, he fought for the Nazis. And when the Nazis were falling apart, he fought for the U.S. Army. So he was a survivor, and I've been able to access a lot of the sources in Argentina, including excellent records of where Hitler escaped to. And I include a discussion of the place in Bariloche where Hitler got to. You can, this whole resort area that was built for him. And, even on YouTube, if you search it, and I reference it in the book, there are many people who knew Hitler, who served him in the hotels he was in or the places he stayed, who were his confidants or, intimately working with Hitler one way or the other in Argentina, give interviews that are videotaped and on, available on the internet where they discuss knowing Hitler and working with Hitler in Argentina. In Argentina, it's, I would say, common knowledge that Hitler escaped Argentina, and the Argentinians consider the U.S. kind of, propagandized and dumb to think that Hitler committed a suicide ritual with Eva Braun in the, the Führer bunker in April 1945.
What did Eisenhower think about all this?
Eisenhower, it's remarkable. This little piece I have, and you can see the clipping in the book, where Eisenhower tells just a little tiny box and Stars and Stripes, which was the military newspaper in World War II. And Eisenhower says he has reason to believe, there is reason to believe that Adolf Hitler may still be alive, according to a remark made by General Eisenhower to Dutch newspaper men. The general statement reversed his previous opinion that Hitler was dead. That's all they put in the paper. Just this little clipping. And October 8th, 1945, you can see it in the book. And very quickly after that, I'm sure Eisenhower was told, don't ever say that again. Because when Eisenhower wrote his autobiography, Crusade in Europe, Eisenhower's back to the Trevor Roper cover story that Hitler committed suicide with Eva Braun in the bunker in 1945.
So how old did he live? What do you think?
The stories from Argentina are into the mid-1965, so Hitler would have been in his 80s. He would have lived maybe 20 more years, late 70s, early 80s.
Family?
No, lived with Eva Braun. They got away together. No children, of course, or anything is reported. But the two of them in isolation. And, of course, living in somewhat of luxury, servants, and taken care of, and the German community in constant contact with them, a very active German community, still largely pro-Nazi even after the war, and many of the top Nazi scientists and the like also got to Argentina and were working with Perón's military to develop jet planes and all kinds of advanced technology in Argentina at that time, as well as in the United States. So, the Nazi community was alive and well in Argentina at the end of the war. There's excellent reports that Bormann escaped. I mean, and by some very credible people. I mean, there's a book by first name is a little hard to say, Ladislaus Farrago, on Bormann, the aftermath of Bormann and the Fourth Reich. Farrago did the biography of Patton, that was used to make the Patton movie.
With George C. Scott.
With George C. Scott. And he did a book on Bormann in which Farrago spent years tracking Bormann down in Argentina and had contact with Bormann. I don't think he actually ever met Bormann, but he had lots of contacts with people close to Bormann. Another book by Paul Manning, who was a journalist at the end of the war, on Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, tracked Bormann down in Argentina and writes a very hard to get book, very expensive to buy even a used copy of it, but it's an outstanding account of Bormann's transferring money out of Germany through Alan Dulles starting in 1943 and then escaping, Manning even remarkably found the Perrone bank accounts that were created for Bormann in Bormann's name that Bormann was able to use once he got out of Germany.
And I'm sure Hitler was well off, wasn't he?
You know, more wealthy than they had any reason to ever. Hitler had everything he wanted, no needs whatsoever at the end of his life in Argentina. Live a life as a country gentleman, you know. And I'm sure with the Nazis in Argentina, you know, continuing to network and work with those who were yet alive, there was, you know, the whole Odessa story, which is largely fictional, yet does represent a Nazi community which thrived in Argentina at the end of the war.
He would have been alive when Kennedy was assassinated.
Yes, he would have been. I think that's exactly correct. And, you know, in fact, some of the remarkable things, Alan Dulles, who was fired by Jack Kennedy after the Bay of Pigs, and I attribute as one of the major plotters when I wrote, you know, who
right.
really killed Kennedy is planning Kennedy's assassination. James Angleton was Dulles' assistant in Bern. Well, James Angleton ends up heading counterintelligence at the CIA, and he's the guy who ends up with Oswald, Lee Harvey Oswald's CIA file, maintaining files on U.S. military who we induced to defect to Russia, the Soviet Union, as if they were giving up their U.S. citizenship when really they were double agents. So between Angleton and Dulles, the black arts are alive and well. And these people who were still played a role in the Kennedy assassination were working together back, you know, during the Nazi period and helping Hitler and the other top Nazis escape, and yet end up in our CIA, just like Galen, in his entire Gestapo organization, is taken over by Alan Dulles and made to be a pillar of the CIA and also West Germany's intelligence operation going against the Russians. It was the Dulleses who largely formed the Cold War, saying, we'll take all the Nazis and we'll oppose the communists in Russia. And when Stalin was trying to tip off Truman that Dulles and the OSS had helped Hitler escape, what Stalin was really saying was, your intelligence guys are setting up the United States
right.
to fight Russia later.
Absolutely.
And you're being maneuvered, Mr. Truman, into this position, and you're not even aware of your guys like Alan Dulles and all these others and these now about to be CIA.
Dulles was a traitor.
Written script for you. Pardon me?
He was a traitor, wasn't he?
Well, you know, I think, yes. In my analysis, I'd have to say Dulles was a traitor. Dulles had his own view, and his own view, it was Protestant, it was a blue-blood Connecticut family. He thought he knew the right for the United States. He was going to set us against communists. He was going to take over all the Nazis, all the Nazi scientists he could get, all the Nazi intelligence Gestapo he could get.
He was after Castro, wasn't he?
He was after Castro. He wanted desperately to get Castro. He was pitting the United States, even in the Eisenhower administration, to go to war against Russia. He was constantly beating the war drums and making Russia the boogeyman. You know, the communists were our real enemy. Dulles agreed with Hitler that the mission of National Socialism, and Dulles was fine with being a National Socialist. Remember, National Socialism is a leftist political, National Socialists. The major difference was the Nazis wanted government to work with industry and these multinational corporations, and whereas the communists wanted to eliminate private property. Well, Dulles was happy if we adopted all the Nazi technology, money, people to fight the communists, because Dulles agreed that when Hitler attacked Russia, that was the best thing Hitler ever did.
Did Bormann mastermind all of this?
Bormann masterminded the money. He was the great personal secretary to Hitler. And again, both Bormann and Mueller, who was the head of the Gestapo, got their allegiance because they were the two guys who were with Hitler when Hitler killed this Geller, this young girl that in the 20s, Hitler's niece that he was living with and having an affair with. And she was found naked in Hitler's apartment where she was then living, shot with Hitler's gun. And Bormann and Mueller was the police chief in Munich at the time. Bormann was a Nazi working with Hitler. They come in, they crate up the body, they ship it out of Munich, and they declare her death a suicide. They take Hitler, who's having basically a nervous breakdown, and they protect him. Well, Bormann and Mueller had a ticket with Hitler from then on. Bormann was the private secretary, and he managed the money, and Bormann was the genius who got the money out, the Nazi loot, out of Germany, starting in 1943. I mean, even in 1943, I think Bormann might have said to Hitler, look, we're going to have plan number two in case plan number one doesn't work. If you don't win the war, we're not going to stick around and get prosecuted.
Now, Bormann, his body was never found either.
And in fact, even in the 80s, they said they found a Bormann body in Germany. They dug up some parking lot. Oh, this is Bormann. And they said, we're going to find DNA. And the Germans argue that they have DNA that proves that this body was Bormann. Of course, they never showed the DNA tests to the world. They didn't publish them in an academic journal. It wasn't like, the Connecticut archaeologist who in 2009 got access to the Hitler skull. Everything that the state archaeologist did with the Hitler skull to get the DNA tested in a top-notch lab of DNA testing in Connecticut is on the public record and, is documented and is there to be seen. The DNA testing that proves that this body they found in Germany was Bormann, no one has seen. It's not been peer-reviewed. It's, again, another, we found a body, let's make it Bormann's. I mean, they said Mueller was killed, the head of the Gestapo. Finally, somebody opened up Mueller's grave, and it had the coffin had pieces of three different bodies in it. Remember, there were a lot of bodies around at the end of World War II in Germany. A lot of people had been killed in Berlin. It was easy to find bodies and say this is so-and-so and that's so-and-so. And who was going to tell the difference before DNA testing?
Nobody.
So there's identification of all these Nazis, which, subsequently there's been a huge amount of work on and by credible people tracking down the fact that many, many Nazis escaped to the United States, to Argentina. And, of course, it's credible when we know that, for instance, Eichmann, Mengele, Klaus Barbie, these vicious Nazi criminals did get out. And I discuss in the book and document this entire Vatican rat line.
Did anybody ever rat on Hitler?
Yes. I mean, in fact, it was generally known in Argentina that Hitler was there. It was just protected by Perón.
Like bin Laden was in Pakistan,
precisely.
But nobody said anything. And that was with today's technology. In those days,
precisely.
We didn't have anything.
But again, with enormous amounts of money, with a determination to stay private, with the willing cooperation of the people who don't want this known either.
Hold on, Jerry. We're going to talk more about hunting Hitler, and we will take phone calls. Final hour to go here on Coast to Coast AM.